This is Chapter 6 of An Outline of Esoteric Science by Rudolf Steiner. The chapter is entitled Cosmic and Human Evolution, Now and in the Future. Unless we understand past evolution, it is impossible to know anything about the present and future states of human and cosmic evolution in the sense of spiritual science. Because everything spiritual researchers are able to know about the present and the future is simultaneously present in what presents itself to their perception as they observe the hidden facts of the past. This book has dealt with the Saturn, Sun, Moon, and Earth phases of evolution. Without observing the facts of previous evolutionary phases, we cannot understand the Earth phase of evolution in the sense of spiritual science, because in a certain respect the realities of the Moon, Sun, and Saturn phases are present in what confronts us now in the earthly world. The beings and things that were involved in the moon phase continued to evolve, and everything that belongs to our present earth came from them. However, not everything that came from the moon and has now become the earth is perceptible to consciousness in the physical world of the senses. Part of what passed from the moon to the earth in the course of evolution only becomes evident at a certain level of supersensible consciousness. Having reached this level of cognition, we can perceive that our earthly world is connected to a supersensible world, which contains the part of moon existence that did not condense enough to be physically perceived by our senses. The supersensible world contains this aspect of the moon as it is at present, not as it was during the ancient moon phase of evolution. However, it is possible for supersensible consciousness to get a picture of conditions at that time. When this supersensible consciousness concentrates on the perception that is possible at present, it becomes evident that this perception is gradually separating into two images all by itself. One image represents the form the Earth had during its moon phase of evolution. But as the other image presents itself, we can recognize that it contains a form that is still in a seminal stage. Only in the future will it become a reality in the way that the earth is a reality now. On further observation, it becomes apparent that in a certain sense, the results of what happens on earth are constantly flowing into this future form, which therefore represents what our earth is meant to become. The effects of earthly existence will unite with what happens in this other world, giving rise to the new cosmic being into which the earth will eventually be transformed, just as the moon was transformed into the earth. We can call this future form the Jupiter stage. If this Jupiter stage is observed by means of supersensible perception, it becomes evident that in the future certain processes will have to take place because certain beings and things are present in the supersensible part of the earthly world that came from the moon. These beings and things will assume certain forms after various events have taken place within the physical sense-perceptible earth realm. This means that the Jupiter stage will contain something that has already been predetermined by the moon phase of evolution, and it will also contain something new that is entering evolution as a whole only because of processes taking place on the earth. This is why it is possible for supersensible consciousness to experience something of what will happen during the Jupiter stage. The beings and facts that can be perceived within this field of consciousness do not have the character of sensory images. They do not even appear as delicate, airy structures that might give rise to effects reminiscent of sense impressions. The impressions we receive from them are purely spiritual impressions of sound, light, and warmth that are not expressed through material embodiments of any sort. They can only be grasped by means of supersensible consciousness. It is possible to say that such beings have, quote-unquote, bodies, but these bodies become apparent within the soul element, their present essential nature. Like a sum of condensed memories that these beings carry in their soul nature. Within such beings, we can distinguish between what they are now experiencing and what they have already experienced and now remember. The latter is contained in them like a bodily element, which is experienced in the same way that earthly human beings experience their bodies. At a higher stage of supersensible cognition than that just described, as necessary for perceiving the moon and Jupiter, it is possible to perceive supersensible things and beings that are further evolved forms of what was already present during the sun stage. At present, these figures have achieved such high levels of existence that they are not perceptible at all to consciousness that has only reached the level of being able to perceive moon forms. This world's image also splits into two when we contemplate it inwardly. One image leads to knowledge of the past sun stage, while the other presents a future form of the earth. The earth will assume this form when the effects of the earth and Jupiter processes have flowed into the forms of this world. Spiritual science calls this the Venus stage. Similarly, a future stage of evolution that can be called the Vulcan stage, which has the same relationship to the Saturn stage as Venus to the sun and Jupiter to the moon, becomes evident to a still more highly developed supersensible consciousness. Therefore, in considering the past, present, and future of the earth, we can speak of the Saturn, Sun, Moon, Earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan phases of evolution. Several chapters in this book have described how the human world and human beings themselves move through the stages that have been given the names Saturn, Sun, Moon, Earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan. The relationship of human evolution to certain celestial bodies, which coexist with the earth and have been given the names Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars, and so on, was also indicated. Of course, these heavenly bodies are also undergoing evolutions of their own. At the present time, they have reached the stage where their physical aspects present themselves to our perception as the entities that physical astronomy knows as Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, and so on. In the sense of spiritual science, present-day Saturn is a reincarnation of ancient Saturn, so to speak, and came about because of the presence of certain beings prior to the sun's separation from the earth. These particular beings were unable to participate in this separation because they had incorporated so many characteristics suited to Saturn existence that they were out of place on a cosmic body that concentrated primarily on developing sun characteristics. Present-day Jupiter, however, came about because of the presence of beings with characteristics that will only be able to develop during the future Jupiter stage of general evolution. A dwelling place was made where they could foreshadow this future evolution. Mars is a celestial body inhabited by beings who went through the moon phase of evolution in such a way that they no longer had anything to gain from staying on Earth. Mars is a reincarnation of old moon on a higher level. Present-day Mercury is the dwelling of beings who are ahead of the Earth's evolution because they have developed certain earthly characteristics in a higher form than is possible on Earth. In a similar way, present-day Venus prophetically anticipates the Venus stage of the future. Because of all this, we are quite justified in giving the stages before and after the Earth phase the names of their present representatives in the cosmos. It goes without saying that when people want to use intellects trained in the outer observation of nature to judge the parallel drawn here between the supersensibly perceived states of Saturn, Sun, and so on, and their namesakes among the physical heavenly bodies, they will raise many objections to what has been presented here. But just as it is possible to use mathematical concepts to visualize the solar system as an image of happenings in time and space, it is also possible for supersensible cognition to imbue this mathematical image with a soul content, so that it takes on a form that permits drawing this parallel. Imbuing the image with soul content in this way, however, is also fully consistent with a further application of a strict natural scientific method of observation. At the moment, this natural scientific method still restricts itself to trying to express the interrelationship between the solar system and the Earth in purely mathematical, mechanical concepts, while the natural science of the future will, of itself, be driven to expand these mechanical concepts to include ones imbued with soul. It would certainly be possible to show that these modern natural scientific ideas already provide sufficient grounds for expanding these concepts, but this undertaking would require a whole book in itself. All that can be done here is to point to this matter, although doing so exposes it to many misunderstandings as well as a result. The disagreements between spiritual science and natural science are often only apparent ones. They result simply from the refusal of natural science to formulate ideas that are demanded not only by supersensible cognition, but also, if the truth be told, by cognition that restricts itself to sense-perceptible things. Everywhere in the results of modern natural scientific observations, unbiased observers can find indications of other fields of purely sensory, physical observation that will have to be investigated in a purely natural scientific manner in the future. Such investigations will show that a full observation of nature confirms what supersensible perception reveals about any supersensible cosmic events with corresponding sense-perceptible manifestations. In addition to the comprehensive circumstances of Earth's evolution, observations of the nearer future also present themselves to our consciousness. Every image of the past corresponds to one of the future. However, in discussing these things, we must emphasize something that urgently needs to be taken into account. If we want to know about things like this, we must totally relinquish the view that philosophical contemplation, educated merely by sense-perceptible reality, is capable of discovering anything about them. These things cannot and should not ever be researched by thinking about them in this way. If we were to believe that because spiritual science has already supplied us with information about the moon phase of evolution, we will now be able to discover what things will look like on Jupiter by comparing the circumstances of Earth and Moon and applying this kind of thinking, we will succumb to enormous deceptions. These circumstances should only be researched through supersensible consciousness that rises to the level necessary to observe them. Only when the results of this research have been communicated is it also possible to understand them without supersensible consciousness. Spiritual researchers are in a different position with regard to communications about the future than they are with regard to those about the past. We are not initially able to confront future events as impartially as we confront the past. What will happen in the future stirs up our feeling and willing, but we tolerate the past quite differently. Anyone who observes life will know that this is true even of our ordinary existence, but only those who are aware of certain things in the supersensible worlds can know what forms this tendency assumes and to what an enormous extent it increases with regard to life's hidden facts. This is the reason why knowledge of these things is kept within very specific limits. Just as the greater cosmic evolution can be presented as a succession of states from Saturn through the Vulcan phase, it is also possible to present shorter spans of time, such as those that make up the Earth phase of evolution. The enormous upheaval that brought an end to life on Atlantis was followed by the stages in human evolution that have been described in this book as the ancient Indian, ancient Persian, Egypto-Chaldean, and Greco-Latin cultural periods. The fifth period is where we stand now, the present. This period began gradually around the 12th, 13th, and 14th centuries AD, after having been prepared ever since the 4th and 5th centuries. It has been clearly evident ever since the 15th century. The Greco-Latin period that preceded it began around the 8th century BC, and at the end of its first third, the Christ event took place. The disposition and faculties of the human soul changed during the transition from the Egypto-Chaldean period to the Greco-Latin. During the Egypto-Chaldean period, what we now know as logical thinking, or grasping the world through reason, did not yet exist. At that time, the knowledge we now make our own, through our intellect, was acquired in a way that was appropriate then, directly through an inner knowledge that was supersensible in a certain respect. While people perceived things, the necessary concept or image of those things simply appeared in their souls. When the faculty of cognition is like this, not only do images of the physical world of the senses appear, but a certain knowledge of non-sensory realities and beings also rises out of the soul's depths. This was a remnant of the ancient dusk-like, supersensible consciousness that all of humankind had formerly possessed. In the Greco-Latin age, there were more and more people who lacked this faculty. In its place, the capacity for intellectual reflection appeared. People became more and more removed from direct, dreamlike perception of the world of soul and spirit, and ever more dependent on their intellect and feelings to provide an image of that world. In some respects, this state of affairs continued throughout the fourth post-Atlantean period. Only those individuals who had retained the legacy of the former soul disposition, so to speak, were able to admit the spiritual world into their consciousness directly. These people, however, were holdovers from an earlier age. Their type of cognition was no longer suited to the new age, because as a result of the laws of evolution, an old soul capacity loses its full significance when new faculties appear. Human life adapts to these new faculties and no longer knows what to do with the old ones. There were also individuals, however, who quite consciously began to develop other, higher powers in addition to the powers of intellect and feeling they had acquired. These powers made it possible for them to break through into the world of soul and spirit again. The way they had to begin to do this was quite different from how it had happened among the students of the ancient initiates, who had not had to consider the soul faculties that developed only during the fourth post-Atlantean period. This fourth period saw the first beginnings of the type of modern spiritual training that has been described in this book. However, at that time it was only in its beginning stages. It could only be fully developed in the fifth post-Atlantean period, beginning with the 12th and 13th centuries, and especially since the 15th century. People who attempted to ascend into supersensible worlds in this way were able to experience something about higher realms of existence through their own imagination, inspiration, and intuition. To those who were content with the faculties of intellect and feeling that had developed, what ancient clairvoyance had known was accessible only through oral or written traditions that were passed down from generation to generation. For people born after the Christ event, who did not make their way up into supersensible worlds, such traditions were also their only means of knowing anything about the essential nature of this event. However, there were certain initiates who still possessed the old natural ability to perceive the supersensible world, and whose development allowed them to enter a higher world, in spite of the fact that they disregarded humankind's new intellectual and emotional powers. They created a transition from the old form of initiation to the new one. People like this were also present in subsequent periods. However, the essential characteristic of the fourth post-Atlantean period was that human powers of intellect and feeling were strengthened by being cut off from direct interaction with the world of soul and spirit. The souls who incarnated then and greatly developed these powers then carried the results of their development over into their incarnation during the fifth period. As compensation for having been cut off from the spiritual world, the mighty traditions of ancient wisdom were available, especially those having to do with the Christ event. Through the very power of their content, these traditions provided human souls with a confident knowledge of the higher world. There were also always human souls, however, who developed their powers of higher cognition in addition to their faculties of intellect and feeling. It was incumbent upon them to experience the realities of the higher world, and especially the mystery of the Christ event, by means of direct, supersensible knowledge. They always allowed as much of this to flow into other human souls as was comprehensible to them and good for them. In harmony with the purpose of Earth's evolution, the first expansion of Christianity was meant to take place at a time when most of humankind had not developed faculties of supersensible cognition. This is why the force of tradition was so powerful at that time. An extremely powerful force was needed to make people confident in the supersensible world if they themselves were not able to behold this world. With the exception of a brief time during the 13th century, there were almost always individuals who were capable of lifting themselves up into the higher worlds through imagination, inspiration, and intuition. In the Christian era, these people were the successors of the initiates of antiquity, who had been leaders and members of the centers of mystery wisdom. The task of these new initiates was to recognize once again, through their own faculties, what had once been comprehended through ancient mystery wisdom, and to add to this a knowledge of the essential nature of the Christ event. Thus the knowledge arising among the new initiates encompassed all the subject matter of ancient initiation, but from its center radiated the higher knowledge of the mysteries of the Christ event. As long as the human souls of the fourth post-Atlantean period were meant to be consolidating their faculties of intellect and feeling, this knowledge was only able to flow into general life to a limited extent. So, during that time, it was really quite hidden. Then the new age of the fifth cultural period dawned. Its main feature was the further development of intellectual abilities, which blossomed exuberantly then and will continue to unfold in the present and future. A gradual build-up to this period began in the 12th and 13th centuries, and its progress accelerated from the 16th century onward into the present. Under these influences, cultivating the forces of reason became the chief concern of evolution in the fifth cultural period. In contrast, traditional knowledge of and confidence in a supersensible world lost more and more of its power over human souls. However, it was replaced by what we may call an increasingly strong influx into human souls of knowledge derived from modern supersensible consciousness. Quote-unquote hidden knowledge was now flowing, although imperceptibly to begin with, into people's ways of thinking. It is self-evident that intellectual forces have continued to reject this knowledge right into the present. But what must happen will happen, in spite of any temporary rejection. Symbolically, this hidden knowledge, which is taking hold of humanity from the other side, and will do so increasingly in the future, can be called, quote, the knowledge of the Grail, unquote. If we learn to understand the deeper meaning of this symbol, as it is presented in stories and legends, we will discover a significant image of what has been described above as the new initiation knowledge, with the Christ mystery at its center. Therefore, modern initiates can also be known as Grail initiates. The path to supersensible worlds, whose first stages have been described in this book, leads to, quote, the science of the Grail, unquote. A unique feature of this knowledge is that its facts can only be investigated by those who acquire the means of doing so that are described in this book. Once these facts have been discovered, however, they can then be understood by means of the soul forces that have been developing during the fifth cultural period. In fact, it will become increasingly evident that these forces will find their satisfaction in this knowledge to an ever greater extent. At present, we are living in a time when more of this knowledge ought to enter human common consciousness than was formerly the case. This book hopes to convey the information it contains from this point of view. To the extent that human evolution will absorb Grail knowledge, the impulse supplied by the Christ event can become ever more significant. Increasingly, an inner aspect will be added to the external aspect of Christian evolution. What we can recognize through imagination, inspiration, and intuition about the higher worlds in conjunction with the Christ mystery will increasingly permeate our life of ideas, feeling, and will. Hidden, in quotes, Grail knowledge will become evident. As an inner force, it will increasingly permeate the manifestations of human life. For the duration of the fifth cultural period, knowledge of supersensible worlds will continue to flow into human consciousness. When the sixth period begins, humanity will have been able to reacquire the non-sensory perception it possessed in a dusk-like way in earlier times, but now on a higher level, and in a form that is quite different from the old perception. In ancient times, when our souls knew about the higher worlds, what our souls knew about the higher worlds was not imbued with our own forces of reason and feeling. It was received as inspiration from above. In the future, our souls will not only receive these flashes of inspiration, but will also comprehend them and experience them as the essence of human soul nature. In future, when a soul receives knowledge about a certain being or thing, the very nature of the intellect will find this justified. If knowledge of a different sort asserts itself, knowledge of a moral commandment or a human behavior, the soul will tell itself, "My feelings will only be justified if I act in accordance with this knowledge." A sufficiently large number of human beings are meant to develop this state of mind during the sixth post-Atlantean cultural period. In a certain way, what the third or Egypto-Chaldean period contributed to humanity's evolution is being repeated in the fifth. At that time, the human soul still perceived certain realities of the supersensible world, although this perception was waning as intellectual faculties prepared to emerge. These faculties were to temporarily exclude human beings from the higher world. In the fifth cultural period, the supersensible realities that had been perceived in a dusk-like state of consciousness are becoming evident again, but are now being imbued with our own personal forces of intellect and feeling, and with what human souls can gain through knowledge of the Christ mystery. This is why they are assuming different forms than they did previously. In ancient times, impressions from the supersensible worlds were experienced as forces that urged human beings on, but emanated from an outer spiritual world that did not include them. In contrast, more recent evolution shows us to perceive these impressions as coming from a world we human beings are growing into and are increasingly a part of. No one ought to believe that the Egypto-Chaldean cultural period will be repeated in such a way that our souls will simply be able to take up what was then present and has come down to us from those times. If understood correctly, the effect of the Christ impulse is to make the human souls that receive it feel, recognize, and conduct themselves as members of a spiritual world, whereas formerly they were outsiders. While the third cultural period is revived in the fifth in order to be imbued with a totally new element in human souls provided by the fourth period, something similar happens in the sixth cultural period with regard to the second, and in the seventh with regard to the first or ancient Indian cultural period. All the wonderful wisdom that the great teachers of ancient India could proclaim will be able to reappear as life truths in human souls in the seventh cultural period. Now, any transformations in things in the earthly world outside of human beings also have a certain relationship to humankind's own evolution. When the seventh cultural period has run its course, the earth will be struck by an upheaval comparable to the one that took place between the Atlantean and post-Atlantean ages. After this, evolution will continue under transformed earthly circumstances through seven more time periods. On a higher level, the human souls incarnating then will experience the same fellowship with a higher world that the Atlanteans experienced on a lower level. However, only human beings embodying souls that have become all that they could under the influence of the Greco-Latin cultural period and the subsequent fifth, sixth, and seventh periods of post-Atlantean evolution will be able to cope with these reconfigured earthly circumstances. The inner nature of these souls will correspond to what the earth has then become. Other souls will have to remain behind at this stage, although earlier they could still have chosen to create the prerequisites for participation in it. The souls mature enough to face the conditions that will exist after the next great upheaval will be the ones who succeeded in imbuing supersensible knowledge with their own forces of intellect and feeling at the transition from the fifth to the sixth post-Atlantean period. The fifth and sixth periods are the decisive ones, so to speak. In the seventh period, although the souls who have achieved the goal of the sixth will continue to develop accordingly, the changed circumstances in their surroundings will provide little opportunity for the others to make up for lost time. The next opportunity will present itself only in the distant future. This is how evolution is proceeding from one age to the next. Supersensible cognition observes not only future changes involving the earth alone, but also ones that occur in interaction with the neighboring heavenly bodies. There will come a time when both the earth and humanity have made such progress in evolution that the forces and beings that had to separate from the earth during Lemurian times to enable earthly beings to continue to progress will be able to reunite with the earth. At that time the moon will reconnect with the earth. This will happen because sufficient numbers of human souls possess enough inner strength to make these moon forces fruitful for further evolution. This will take place at a time when another development that has turned toward evil will be taking place alongside the high level of development reached by the appropriate number of human souls. Souls whose development has been delayed will have accumulated so much error, ugliness, and evil in their karma that they temporarily form a distinct union of evil and aberrant human beings who vehemently oppose the community of good human beings. In the course of its development, the good portion of humankind will learn to use the moon forces to transform the evil part so that it can participate in further evolution as a distinct earthly kingdom. Through the work of the good part of humanity, the earth, then reunited with the moon, will become able to reunite with the sun after a certain period of evolution, and also with the other planets. After an interim stage that resembles a sojourn in a higher world, the earth will transform itself into the Jupiter state. During the Jupiter stage, what is now called the mineral kingdom will not exist. Mineral forces will have been transformed into plant forces. The lowest kingdom, appearing during the Jupiter stage, will be the plant kingdom, which will have a form entirely different from what it has now. Above that will be the animal kingdom, which will have undergone a comparable transformation, followed by a human kingdom, consisting of the descendants of the evil union that came about on earth. Above these there will be a higher human kingdom, consisting of the descendants of the community of good human beings on earth. A great deal of the work of this second human kingdom will consist of ennobling the fallen souls in the evil union, so that they will still be able to find their way back into the actual human kingdom. At the Venus stage, the plant kingdom will also have disappeared, and the lowest kingdom will be the animal kingdom, transformed once more. Above that, there will be three human kingdoms of different degrees of perfection. During the Venus stage, the earth will remain united with the sun. In contrast, as evolution proceeds on Jupiter, the sun will once again break away from Jupiter and influence it from outside. Then a reunification of the sun and Jupiter will take place, and the transformation into the Venus stage will gradually continue. During the Venus stage, a distinct cosmic body will break away, containing all the beings who have resisted evolution and constituting an quote-unquote unredeemable moon, so to speak, end quotes. It will move toward an evolution that is so different in character from anything we can experience on earth that there are no words that can possibly express it. The part of humanity that has continued to evolve, however, will move on to the Vulcan phase of evolution in a fully spiritualized form of existence. Describing this state falls outside the scope of this book. We see that the highest imaginable ideal of human evolution results from grail knowledge, that is, the spiritualization that we achieve through our own work. Ultimately, this spiritualization will appear as the result of the harmony that human beings were able to bring about in the fifth and sixth cultural periods between their forces of intellect and feeling and their knowledge of supersensible worlds. What they produced there in their inmost souls will ultimately become the outer world. The human spirit raises itself up to the mighty impressions of its outer world, first divining and later recognizing the spiritual beings behind these impressions, while the human heart senses the infinite loftiness of this spiritual element. However, human beings can also recognize their own inner experiences of intellect, feeling, and morality as the seeds of a future spiritual world. If we believe that human freedom is incompatible with foreknowledge and with predestination of the shape of things to come, we should think of it like this. Our free action in the future will depend as little on what predestined things will be like then as it does on our intention to be living a year from now in a house we design today. To the extent that our inner nature permits, we will be free in the house we have built for ourselves. and we will also be free in the circumstances that come about on Venus and Jupiter, to the extent that our own inner nature permits. Our freedom will not depend on what is predestined by prior circumstances, but on what our souls have made of themselves. The Earth stage contains what evolved during the preceding Saturn, Sun, and Moon phases of evolution. Earthly human beings find wisdom in the events taking place around them. It is there as the result of what happened previously. The Earth is the descendant of the old Moon, which shaped itself and everything belonging to it into the cosmos of wisdom. The Earth, which is the beginning of an evolution that will inject new force into this wisdom, brings human beings to the point where they experience themselves as independent members of a spiritual world. This is due to the fact that the human eye was fashioned by the spirits of form during the Earth phase of evolution. Just as the physical body was shaped by the spirits of will on Saturn, the life body by the spirits of wisdom on the Sun, and the astral body by the spirits of motion on the Moon. What manifests as wisdom does so through the interaction of the spirits of will, wisdom, and motion. In wisdom, earthly beings and processes can exist in harmony with the other beings of their world through the work of these three orders of spiritual beings. In the future, the independent human eye, which was received through the spirits of form, will exist in harmony with the beings of Earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan, because of the power that the Earth stage injects into wisdom. This is the power of love, which must begin in human beings on Earth. The, quote, cosmos of wisdom, unquote, is developing into a cosmos of love. Everything that the eye can develop within itself must turn into love. The exalted Sun being we were able to characterize in describing Christ's evolution manifests as the all-encompassing example of love, planting the seed of love in the innermost core of the human being. From there it is meant to flow out into all of evolution. Just as wisdom, which formed earlier, discloses itself in the forces of the sense-perceptible earthly world, in present-day forces of nature, love itself will appear as a new natural force in all phenomena in the future. This is the mystery of all future evolution, that our knowledge and everything we do out of a true understanding of evolution sow seeds that must ripen into love. The greater the power of love that comes into being, the more we will be able to accomplish creativity on behalf of the future. The strongest forces working toward the end result of spiritualization lie in what will come from love. The more spiritual knowledge flows into the evolution of humanity and the Earth, the greater the number of viable seeds will there be for the future. Through its very nature, spiritual knowledge transforms itself into love. The whole process that has been described, beginning with the Greco-Latin cultural period and extending throughout the present time, shows how this transformation is to proceed. It also shows us the purpose of this future evolution that is now in its beginning stages. The wisdom for which the groundwork was laid on Saturn, Sun, and Moon works in the human physical, etheric, and astral bodies, presenting itself as cosmic wisdom. In the eye, however, it becomes inner wisdom. Beginning with the Earth phase of evolution, the wisdom of the outer cosmos becomes inner wisdom in the human being. Internalized in this way, it becomes the seed of love. Wisdom is the prerequisite for love. Love is the result of wisdom that has been reborn in the eye. If anyone is misled into believing that evolution, as it has been explained above, bears a fatalistic stamp, this is a result of having misunderstood the explanations. If we were to believe that evolution condemns a certain number of people to become members of the kingdom of evil humanity, in quotes, we would have failed to see how the interrelationship between the sense-perceptible and the soul-spiritual takes shape in the course of this evolution. Within certain limits, these worlds, both the sense-perceptible and the soul-spiritual, each constitute a separate evolutionary current. Through forces inherent in the sense-perceptible current, the forms of quote-unquote evil human beings come about. However, it will only be necessary for any given human soul to incarnate in such a body if it has created the necessary preconditions itself. It might also happen that the forms arising out of the forces of the sense-perceptible world find no reincarnating human souls to embody, because these souls have all become too good for such bodies. In that case, the cosmos would have to ensoul these forms with something other than formerly human souls. Such forms will be occupied by human souls only when these same souls have prepared themselves for such an incarnation. In this field, supersensible cognition is bound to report what it sees. For instance, that at a particular point in the future there will be two human kingdoms, one good and one evil. However, this does not mean that the present state of human souls forces supersensible cognition to the rational conclusion that this future state will be the natural and inevitable result. Supersensible cognition's ways of investigating the evolution of human forms and the evolution of the destinies of souls are and must be completely separate, and to confuse the two in our worldview would be a remnant of a materialistic attitude that would seriously impinge on the science of the supersensible. The end of Chapter 6 of An Outline of Esoteric Science.